A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, happy Saturday, everybody. Happy Saturday, Betsy.
Happy Saturday, Daniel.
I wish this was video because I just saw you do something I have never seen anybody do.
Well, clearly you don't know anyone with a cold nose then.
Well, Betsy is mushing her nose into the big foam cover on her microphone. I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "If I push my nose really hard into the mic, it gets warm."
Yeah.
Yeah, that is officially your microphone for the rest of its existence.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. As long as my nose is warm, I really don't care.
That was really weird. But we got to move on.
Yes.
There's no time for your dilly-dallying. Because
right.
We have got an hour and a half's worth of stuff to cram into 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So, going to get a shoehorn, drink some Mountain Dew, and we're going to make this happen.
And let's go.
Now, every time we turn around, we all know this is true. We turn on the news and we hear about something new that's in the drinking water.
Oh, yes.
Something new that's very scary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it happens all the time. Well, luckily, there are places around like Gordon Water who can help with that.
Yeah.
And better yet, they're expanding and have a brand new location opening in Rockford. We're going to tell you all about that in the last segment today.
We're also very excited to introduce all of you to a very good friend of ours, Don Decker, the director of the Meyer May House in Grand Rapids. You know, every time we talk to Don, we learn something new, and he just has this way of inspiring our design creativity. So that's something you aren't going to want to miss. That's coming up a little bit later.
Right. But right now, let's talk about paint, because there is nothing more exciting than paint.
Right. Well, and we've been doing a lot of painting, getting ready for this event we have coming
yes,
up on November 7th.
We do.
Yeah.
And you move too quickly because I really wasn't being sarcastic. Painting sounds so boring. You know, watching paint dry, that's what everybody says is the, the epitome of boring.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that is.
Right.
But painting shouldn't be a bad project. And yet, I don't know very many customers who leave the store skipping down the aisle because they've got a gallon of paint to go home and apply. We have this idea, this dread that we create when a paint project comes up, at least a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're unsure how to start it. We're worried that something's going to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows exactly what's involved? But the thing is, paint projects can actually go very simple, and they're great projects because you'll never do more to change the look and feel of your home for less than by painting.
Right. It just takes a couple little tips and tricks. And, you know, that's really what has been reinforced to us this week through all of our paint projects is these things that we kind of already knew, but holy smokes, have they become very clear this week. The first one being use the right tape. I mean,
yeah, as dumb as it sounds and as obvious as it sounds, it really makes a tremendous difference. And actually, we thought we were.
Yeah.
In this particular instance, we were painting all these displays, like Betsy said, for this color event that we've got coming up, and you're all invited to that.
Yes.
Well,
yes, you are.
The first 100 of you. You have to get tickets.
Yep.
All of that information is online at repcolite.com. You can check that out. But we're getting these displays ready, and we knew we were going to be taping over freshly painted areas. So we knew we needed delicate surface tape.
Yeah, that narrows the field.
We got a couple different options. We've got yellow frog tape, and we've got a delicate surface tape, a blue tape from 3M.
Mm-hmm.
We had both of them here, so we tried them both.
Yeah.
Turns out one is way better than the other, at least in our testing in this particular instance. The yellow tape far outperformed the blue tape.
Yeah.
It removed easily. It didn't allow it nearly as much bleed through with the paint, which is a real pain. And the biggest thing for me is that it came off complete. The blue tape, when I pulled it off, it shredded, it ripped, and then I had all these little slivers of tape to try to pick out of the paint and get off.
Yeah.
And I ended up scratching the surface, and now we've got to go back and touch up.
Right.
The right tape makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and another quick tip on taping, make sure that you're taking that tape off before the paint completely dries over it. You don't want that film to be created between your tape and the wall, because then you run the risk of tearing it. Also, make sure you're pulling the tape off at a 45-degree angle. That's going to reduce some of that pulling off of the new paint.
Right. The right tape for you, it all is going to depend on your situation, so when buying your paint and getting all of that, just ask us at the counter at any Rep Collider Port City paint store. Tell us what you're working on. We'll make a recommendation for tape, but don't skimp on it.
Right.
Another thing that we learned is you've got to use the right brush.
Oh, yes. We always talk about that Excalibur brush by Corona. You know, everyone's heard us saying how great it is, and that was so reinforced because I had, I don't know, 8 different colors going, and I only had so many Excalibur brushes, and then that's the Chinex. It has the DuPont stuff so that it releases the paint.
Right, the filaments, the bristles are created with this Chinex from DuPont.
Right.
Like Betsy said, it cleans very easily. That's its main claim to fame.
Right. But then I also had another Corona brush that was just the regular old nylon type of brush. And let me tell you, night and day difference in cleaning out those brushes. I spent 3 times as much time cleaning out the nylon brush as the Excalibur. It's totally worth the money.
We have talked about the Excalibur cleaning up so quickly.
Yeah.
But it is so much fun, literally, when you watch it rinse off. 40 seconds under running water and the brush was basically clean.
Yep.
We were able to switch colors very, very rapidly.
Right.
So buying a good brush is the way to go. And we can't recommend enough that Corona Excalibur with the Chinex bristle.
Right. Now, one last quick tip here. Is really paint quality matters. We talk about it a lot, you know, buy better paint, but we used Aura on these projects. I had a lot of dark colors going and 2 coats over white primer easily.
Right. It was a teal color. And a few weeks ago, we talked to Paul Van Heest, a painting contractor, and he recommended Aura as one of his go-to products.
Right.
He talked about how it gives him great coverage every single time. And that's what we saw with this teal. We would have expected 3, maybe more coats than that.
Oh, yeah.
And we got it in 2, like you said, over white.
Yeah. It went on so smoothly and it looked fantastic when it was done. Another good reason to come out to the event, to see my teal wall.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we could go on and on. There are all kinds of little tips and tricks and things that we learned, but we don't have time. If you have other questions, whenever you start a paint project, any Rep Collider Port City paint store, anybody in any of those stores has all the knowledge and info that you'll need to tackle that next project. You just need to ask.
Right.
Now, when we come back, we're in the studio with Don Decker from the Meyer May House, and we are going to learn all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yes, we are. I can hardly wait.
Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, it's finally time.
I know.
Waited for quite a while for this.
Yes, very impatiently, I might add. We've been waiting to talk to this guest. He said, just wait till after Art Prize, and then let's do the interview. So the day is finally here, thank goodness.
That's right. We're in the studio with Don Decker, the director of the Meyer May House in Grand Rapids. And like we said, we're really excited. Don, thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invitation, and thanks for visiting the house a few weeks ago.
Well, we did. We visited the house.
Thank you for having us, because holy smokes.
It was a great experience, and we talked about it on air a few weeks ago. I can't remember exactly how long. We'll put a link in the show notes so you can check it out, and it's worth checking out, because it's kind of funny, because basically, we recorded that segment hours after we had been through the house, and we sounded like we had been chugging
Mountain Dew. I was going to say, you can hear our excitement because we are like a freight train coming.
Yeah. We were very excited. We almost redid that one, but the energy of it just reflects how much fun we had at the house.
Absolutely.
So anyway, when we were there, we talked to you, Don, and said we got to get you on to give our listeners more information, because we went over stuff, but we're just skimming the surface.
This is a 72-hour show, right?
Exactly. We're going to cram all of that in, and we've got Mountain Dew for you to drink, so we'll just speed things right along. Anyway, for any of our listeners who aren't aware, why don't you just start with, briefly, what is the Meyer May House and why is it a big deal?
It's a big deal because Meyer May was a local clothing merchant. His store was located in downtown Grand Rapids. And in 1908, he commissioned Frank Lloyd Wright to do a home for himself and his wife and what they hoped would ultimately be a family of children. It was Wright's first major commission in the state of Michigan. And in 1985, Steelcase acquired the property with the intent of doing a museum quality restoration. So what makes it significant is that today you're able to walk in and experience and enjoy the house the way the Mays did when they moved in back in 1909.
Because there was an addition put on, right? But that was not put on by Wright. And that was removed.
That's correct.
In this restoration process.
The first step in the restoration process is, what are you going to restore it to?
Mm-hmm.
And because the addition was not designed by right, it was fairly simple. We'll dismantle the addition to bring the home back to the way it was when the original family moved in. And so that's what you'll experience as you go through the house.
Now, I know that with the restoration, Betsy, they had a video that they,
yeah.
I hesitate to say made us watch, but that one guy stood at the door with his arms crossed, remember?
And said, you must go watch the video.
It was a great video on the restoration process, and I believe it's on your website. I believe anybody can watch that.
Correct.
Snippets. But I know that you had a lot of photographic evidence eventually that surfaced to draw from.
We were very, very fortunate that both of May's children were alive at the time the restoration began. And Harriet, the daughter in particular, was very, very helpful in digging out photographs and sharing family oral history, which helped you understand what you needed to be looking for and what you need to be doing in order to bring the house back to the way it was at the time it was constructed.
So what about stories of the house now? I mean, you are a docent there.
That's correct.
So you bring people through the house and explain it. You've got to have stories. In fact, even the other docents said, I kind of like to, if I can, I like to hang
around
when
he goes. If I can leave my
goes.
Tour and go on Don's tour, I'd prefer to do that.
So why don't you walk our listeners, they can't see it, but they can go online and look at some pictures. Mm-hmm. Maybe walk them through some of the things that really pop out to you about the house, important stories to you.
Well, one of the stories, I think, is where it's located. It's in the Heritage Hill area of Grand Rapids. And that was an established neighborhood at the time the Meyer May house was built, mm-hmm. which helps you get an understanding of how radical the house was when you see it in the norms of the period.
Right.
And the neighbors scratched their head and wondered, what is this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And there are many things about the house that you can easily be critical of. For instance, the front door is not on the front. Wright had a reason for doing that. It's because he wanted privacy for visitors as well as the homeowners. But to the neighbors who were accustomed to a welcoming front door, this was a big screw-up. You went all the way to Chicago, you hired this hotshot architect, and the dummy didn't even know enough to put the front door on the front? And Wright thinks of the whole project, the entire setting, as a piece of art, as design. And in fact, one architect not long ago suggested that Wright didn't have clients, he had patrons. That he was practicing a form of art, and he had other people's money to facilitate his doing that.
There is so much I could do with other people's money. I would just like to take a second for myself and for the benefit of all the people that I could help. If you've got money, I can do something pretty cool. I'm not sure what that would be. I'll create something pretty awesome. It may not be Frank Lloyd Wright awesome.
It won't be.
But it'll be awesome on another level.
It won't be Frank Lloyd Wright awesome.
Yeah, we should move on. We're talking with Don Decker, director of the Meyer May House, here on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show. And we're talking about the Meyer May House and all the different things that you run into. Now, I know one of the interesting things I liked is there was a desk area on a landing, right? You're going up the steps.
Absolutely.
There's a little desk, and then there's this weird little cubby or hole that kind of overlooks the dining room table. And there's kind of an interesting story behind why that's there, right?
That's right with an R, not right with a W.
Yes, exactly.
I was thinking that same thing.
Yes, we believe Wright intended that to be a light shaft.
Okay.
Because there are a number of windows as you go up the stairs from the first to the second level. And we believe the opening, which is probably about 30 inches high and 36 inches wide, was intended to be a light shaft. Mm-hmm. However, the May children found that to be one of their most enjoyable spots in the home. They would crawl behind the desk on the landing, and they could kind of curl up with a book and a snack after school and still be connected to the dynamic of the house. And then in the evening, if Mom and Dad had guests over, it was the perfect spot for spying. Every kid's dream to spy on the big people and try and figure out why they're making so much noise. Well, there is built into the house for other reasons, the solution to every kid's dream.
I love that. Now, I have a quick question about the dining room table, because that, to me, was a very unique thing in that house.
Because the table has these pedestals on each corner, right? And they're lit. They're electric lights.
As an alternative to a central chandelier, and I'm not being critical of homes that have chandeliers. I have one in my house. In the context of home improvement challenges, getting consensus on a chandelier has to be kind of high on the list of problems.
Mm-hmm. You seem to speak from experience.
A little bit. You know, it has to have the right design style to be consistent with the rest of the house.
Right.
It has to be the right price point.
Mm-hmm.
Has to have the right amount of bling.
Right.
But did you ever invite anyone over to your house to gaze at the wonders of your chandelier?
Nobody pays attention to that.
You invite them to come over and eat and talk, right?
Right. Yeah.
And,
right.
And so what Wright does is to delete the chandelier and instead put the lights at the corners of the table on posts that look like extended legs. And then he has high backs on the chairs. So what he creates is a very upscale version of the contemporary backyard fire pit, where people gather around to talk. Admittedly, it's more than s'mores that are served around this dining room table. But it's a very intimate gathering space, and he creates a room inside the room. And the architecture of the structure becomes very recessive.
Well, it's very interesting because what you're saying, the room within the room with the lighting, I can imagine, especially in an evening. We were there during the afternoon.
Right.
But the lighting would create, you'd have a darkness around, like you said, a room within a room. It's a very intimate setting at this table now. Very, very cool.
But it works all throughout the day because that's the only place the family had their meals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was no island in the kitchen with stools around it. There was no kitchen table or breakfast nook.
No TV trays.
Well,
do they make TV trays anymore?
I think so. You can buy them at resale shops.
I'm sorry, I digress.
They would have had TV trays, I'm sure, because May was very progressive. The problem was no one had invented the TV yet.
Well, see, he was way ahead of his time then. Yeah.
Well,
just like me.
Well, but
which comes back to the money that if you send me, who knows what I could create.
Wait, I had a really good point.
Go ahead with your really good point.
My really good point was Frank Lloyd Wright was way ahead of his time because I look at the Meyer May house, and it is well over 100 years old now. And I'm thinking, it looks like it is so far even ahead of the time we're in now. It's just stunning to me that it could possibly be 100 years old.
Wright was extremely progressive. And I think he started his thought process by saying, how should people live, rather than simply how has shelter been provided in the past? And he designs his house from the inside out rather than the outside in, which shapes the exterior architecture, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a home just across the street, and I'm not picking on it. It's a wonderful home. But there's marvelous symmetry on the outside of the structure along the street facade. And if you look down one of the sides of the house, you can tell from the height of the windows and the placement of the windows, which is the living room, which is the dining room,
mm-hmm.
and where the buffet it goes in the dining room. But is that how people want it to live? The outside architecture drives the mm-hmm. way you will live. And Wright says, no, if you're going to build a house to live in, then you should start the design from the inside.
I love that point. Now, we are getting to the end of this time. We're actually a little over. I'm wondering if you can hang with us for a few minutes. Over the break, we'll play some commercials. They'll be very entertaining. You won't be disappointed. And then we'll pick it up on the other side. Can you hang with us?
Be happy to.
Excellent. We'll be back in the studio with Don Decker, director of the Meyer May House, when we come back. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the RepcoLite Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. We are back in the studio with Don Decker from the Meyer May House. And we were just talking about how Frank Lloyd Wright designed things from the inside out. And we always like to stress on this show that you should design things for yourself, with you and your family in mind, what works for you and what you like.
Right. Take advice from other people, because you can learn and you can stretch.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, you need to like it. It needs to function for you. Create the atmosphere you want.
Exactly. So obviously, Meyer May did not design his own house. Frank Lloyd Wright did that.
Frank Lloyd Wright knew better than Meyer May what Meyer May wanted.
Right. Exactly. So how did Frank Lloyd Wright make this house specifically for Meyer May? What makes it for him and his family and not any other family?
One of the very obvious ways he does that is with the height of elements. May was 5'4". I think today we would say, to be politically correct, he was vertically challenged. And so as you experience the home, and Wright uses a technique called compression and release throughout virtually all of his homes. But as you walk into the public area on the first level, which includes a welcoming space, the living space, mm-hmm. a dining space, the ceiling height is about 8'6", 8 to 8'7", mm-hmm. Almost a foot and a half lower to 3.5 feet lower than neighboring homes, where 10 and 12 foot were the norm.
Right.
Why does Wright do it? He does it so his client doesn't feel insignificant in his own home.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you walk over to the windows in the living area or the dining area, Betsy's going to be very, very comfortable because she's got a nice unobstructed view out of those windows. Someone at 6'4" will find a wood mass right in their line of sight between the upper and the lower portion, and a clear indication that this is Wright scaling the home for the comfort and enjoyment of his client. What he also does is to shape space very differently than the neighbor's home, where you come into a large foyer. That would be where you would greet your guest. And then there are holes in the foyer's walls called doorways that lead to very discreet rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And the first floor of the May house is a very open floor plan.
Was that common at that time, 1908?
Far from it.
Far from it.
In fact, it's probably one of the more shocking things is people walk in and say, wow, this feels so contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't the norm back then. But if you think of how it lives and how it works, if May's Home Alone, which would be a great name for a movie, if he's home alone just reading this lowered ceiling height, he feels comfortable mm-hmm. in the scale of the living area. Fast forward a few days, and he and his wife invite 10 people over for dinner. They can stand and mingle in the living area, and it feels very comfortable
mm-hmm.
because it flows into adjacent spaces. And if they decide to do a big wine and cheese gig and have 30 people, the space facilitates that. You could have some food in the living area. You could have some food on the dining room table, and you could have servers bringing you beverages, and you just migrate very naturally throughout the whole first level of the house.
Walking into that house, especially what you were talking about, the compression and release, so you come through that, you know, entry, and you come around the corner, and then it opens up. I felt like I just wanted to sit in that space and take it all in and just, I honestly wanted to sit there in silence without a bunch of people talking because it's
You're looking at me when you say that.
Yes, I specifically meant you. It's just one of those spaces where it invites you in and it says, just come and relax and enjoy.
But it's because it was designed
incredible.
Specifically with that in mind.
And the color palette was very different than the norms mm-hmm. of the neighborhood. Betsy just talked about coming in and sitting there and soaking it in and kind of recharging your personal mm-hmm. battery, which is what Wright's intent was, that the home was a place to rejuvenate oneself.
Yeah.
And he uses a color palette that's very simple and at the same time complex, in that it's the same color theme used throughout the entire home. It starts with the color of the glass in the windows, the thing over which he had the least control.
Mm-hmm.
And those same colors repeat in the textiles and in the paint finishes and in the carpet. And so it's this very muted, very serene color palette, mm-hmm. and you transition from the living space to the dining space to the upstairs sleeping spaces, and you're not making adjustments to different colors. Now, that's not to suggest that that's right,
right.
with an R. With an
there
R.
we go with, that word
R.
thing again for everyone, but that was Wright's philosophy of what a color palette should be for a residence.
But right. the thing about it, because we've talked about that, Betsy and I have, that, yeah, it wasn't boring from room to room, because that's the concern people have. If I carry that color scheme throughout the whole home, you know, yeah, I'll have continuity and unity of the color and color flow, but it's going to be boring. But that definitely wasn't boring. He used them in different proportions from room to room. You know, it's not just, this is the wall color, this color is the accent color, and we're going to carry that everywhere. You see it play out in different places. Like you said, the windows have little flecks of this in it and that in it. It's just different proportions, but it still feels continuous and unified as you go room to room.
Well, I think that's part of it, though, is his use of light in different areas makes the colors seem different. As you move through these spaces,
sure.
the way the windows bring light into the space, it makes it different. Plus, you have all of nature that floods in from every angle, and so it's never the same. And I'm guessing, I've only seen it once, I'm guessing through every season that kind of changes as the leaves, you know, turn to red and oranges, that reflects into the house. When the snow comes, it feels completely different. I'm guessing that nature plays a big part of how the walls are viewed and the color is viewed.
Oh, very much so. Wright always wants to connect the inside and the outside. So one of the joys of being involved down at the house is the opportunity to see it in the morning when the sun's coming in from the east, which has an impact on the dining space because it faces the southeast. Being there later in the afternoon or in the evening as the sun is setting, or it has a great impact in the living space, which faces to the southwest. And from season to season, there's across the street from the house on the south side, a tree that is absolutely spectacular in the fall. and it just brings great joy to see those colors coming in. But it's also great in the winter when you get a nice sunny day and the sun's reflecting off the snow and it bounces into the house.
There's so many things that we could talk about, and that's just such a great point to end on, is that, yeah, we don't, most of us, I would say almost all of us, in fact, probably none of us, have a home designed by Frank Lloyd Wright.
No.
We may have a home inspired
right.
by Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yes.
That's probably very likely. Even open, what's that called?
Floor plan?
Open floor plans. I have a home improvement show. Dan Hansen from Repco Light Paint. Even open floor plans are probably inspired, at least I would assume that's why we have those today, right?
Absolutely. He influenced many of the homes we live in without us even being aware of the attribution.
So even if we don't have a home designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, there's a very good likelihood that we have components or elements of our home that were inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright. And the biggest thing that we want everybody to get out of this is that however your home was designed, however it lays out, you can bring some of these elements with the color, with all of that into your space. You can create those intimate settings that we were talking about. All the beauty that we talked about, how it was designed, that can be done. We can do a lot with color and we can really help you. And that's what we're here to do at Repco Light. We'd love to help you with that. And Don, I can't thank you enough for taking time to be with us today. If people want to watch that video that we talked about at the very beginning about the restoration, and there's more information on your website, where do they go and find that? Where is your website?
You can find us at meyermayhouse.steelcase.com or just Google Meyer May House.
I Googled it. I'm a pretty good Googler. M-E-Y-E-R, correct?
Correct.
May. M-A-Y.
Right.
House. H-O-U-S-E. Don Decker, director of the Meyer May House, thanks for sharing all of this information with us today.
My privilege. Thank you.
Well, Betsy, contaminated water is big in the news right now. And when we come back, we're going to be in the studio with somebody who can help you fix that. That's coming up next. Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost. On News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, welcome back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. You know, every time we turn around and turn on the news lately, I feel like there is some huge water thing. They're telling us that you shouldn't be drinking your water because there's something horrible in it and you better start, you know, drinking just bottled water. And it, I find it very frustrating, and I'm a little terrified to drink any water out of my tap now.
Well, we're going to put your fears at ease, or
perfect,
we're going to reinforce them.
Yeah.
We're going to find out.
Great.
We're in the studio with Tom Deisterhoff from Gordon Water, and we're going to talk about all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
Tom, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, I guess what we want to start right off with is we've got this PFAS thing going on that people are hearing about.
Mm-hmm.
People, it's been going on for a while now, a lot of concerns, especially in the Rockford area, and it's spreading all over the place in Michigan. It's a concern. We've got the lead problem in Flint. You know, that was an issue. You guys have filtration systems. What do they do? I mean, is that something that can help us with some of these issues, or is it just simply to make our water taste good?
Absolutely, it can help. And you're right. The contaminant issues have been around for a couple of years, more in the news. The contaminants themselves obviously have been present for quite a number of years. But the Flint situation certainly made the phone ring almost 3 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year ago, a little over a year ago, we're brought into the scenario in the Belmont area with the PFAS, and we've had an opportunity to help a lot of families. PFAS is labeled as an emerging contaminant.
Mm-hmm.
So quite frankly, some of the solutions and some of the protocols and testing and things are still emerging as well. But we felt over a year ago that our solution that we were recommending was a very good one,
mm-hmm.
and it's panned out to be a very good one.
So what is that solution? What are you recommending?
In a scenario where you've got contamination, known contamination, we look at whole house, first of all, to address, you know, the tub and the shower and the hand washing and things. Some of the contaminants are less likely to be absorbed through the skin, but you have an opportunity for that. And then you also have inhalation if you're in the shower. The steam in the shower
sure.
can cause that. And if you, quite frankly, if you got kids, you're bathing an infant
mm-hmm.
or your kids, your adolescents, you want to protect them. You want to give them the best opportunity, right? So we recommend a whole house. It's a high-quality carbon filtration system that cleans itself and backwashes, but it holds on to the contaminants. And then you follow that up with a high-quality drinking water system. Now, both of our solutions are from Kinetico. It's
mm-hmm.
a great manufacturer here in the Midwest. Wonderful technology, great warranties. We've been a dealer for that for 43 years. Long history with them, great warranty, and we've thrown our labor behind some of their products that makes a 10-year parts and labor. So the solution to the contaminants, you know, we talk about the PFAS in Belmont and surrounding areas. PFAS is emerging. Earlier this year, actually about 2 months ago, you know, the city of Parchment had to address their entire municipal supply. Was highly contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been there to assist that with our bottled water because we do 5-gallon bottle water service. We've helped hundreds of families with that, actually. And then other municipalities were testing their wells as well, and their numbers came up. And they were low, but they showed up. And so the concern, the opportunity to help more people that are going, what's in my water?
Mm-hmm.
And even more recently, a town of Otsego, which is between Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo, has some dioxin issues. And again, our solution for one contaminant in this case is really good for other contaminants as well. So it's been kind of like being a fireman where you have the training and you have the equipment, but you don't hope for a disaster.
Right.
But when it comes, you're there to help. Mm. And that's where we've been. Long history in the West Michigan community and growing. Brother and I are second generation owners.
Right. You said your father started it. How long ago?
1973. So
that was the year after I was born. It was almost the perfect time to start something. Right. I'm sure your father.
It was a great year. I'm sure. Yeah. It might have been the inspiration for him to buy into the Lindsay dealership.
Please. Yeah. Your ego is stifling me now. We're sitting here with Tom Deisterhoff from Gordon Water on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show. And we've been talking about contaminated water and some of the things that we can do about it. Now, Tom, from the conversations that we've had so far, it seems that whether you have municipal water or well water, potentially any of us could utilize some of the systems that you have.
Right. Color and odor make the phone ring, right? Mm-hmm. So people on a private well with rusty water or smells like rotten eggs or whatever, they're going to call us, you know, and hardness, high hardness, those issues, you know, they make the phone ring.
Why does water stink?
Well, hydrogen sulfide gas wants to come out. Because it's a dissolved gas, and when you have atmospheric pressure versus down in the well, once it hits the aerators, all of a sudden it's coming out, and it goes from trapped in the and trained in the liquid to air. Because you go, oh, that smells like rotten egg.
At home, my water stunk really badly, and I don't remember how Mom got that fixed. But you've got solutions for all of that.
We've got solutions for all that stuff. We do. And we've got the largest selection, too. And it's cool because we can help. Again, I mentioned the bottled water a little bit ago. We can work with families on a very limited budget. They can afford to come pick up a 5-gallon bottle of water or two or three a month.
Mm-hmm.
They cost $375 a piece. So $10 a month, they can have clean drinking water, right?
Oh, that's not bad.
And then we work with families that have, you know, hundreds of thousand or million-dollar homes, and they need multiple points of filtration because they have larger homes.
Mm-hmm.
The care and concern for yourself and your family is the same. It's
right.
just your affordability and what you can do. And we can work with both ends. And we have the largest selection of treatment equipment along with the bottled water. So
I'm guessing that you do water testing for people. And I'm wondering, what does something like that cost? Because I'm sure that there are people who are thinking, okay, well, it hasn't come out yet in the news that my specific area is affected by whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, you know,
or maybe we'll find something new in our water.
Well, right. Concern just starts to grow. So roughly what does that cost to have you come out and test in case anyone is interested?
Yeah. You know, the things that are hardness, iron, pH, stuff like that, our water specialists do right in the home.
Okay.
And there's no cost to that. We do have national testing laboratories we partnered with. They do a 92 contaminant test, and that's $200. And then we do the PFAS testing. We don't do it. We've partnered with Pace Analytical Labs, and that's $395. And you get all 21, soon to be 24, of the PFAS family of chemicals.
Now, you guys also have a new location opening up in Rockford. Today, you've got your grand opening, correct?
I am super stoked. Right here at 9 o'clock this morning, we're having the grand opening on 14 Mile, right next to Ed Cohen Chevy, between the Chevy dealership and the theater. So stop on in, and we've got some great deals and some fun food from the new Flo's Pizzeria, our neighbor down the street. So.
Sounds good. If anybody has any questions, they should either stop out at the grand opening.
Yep.
Or how do they find you online?
You know, best place is gordonwater.com. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, go blue.
And he just used the word remiss, which I used last week, and we had to Google.
Yes.
So thank you. Go blue. Tom, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And there you go, Betsy. An hour and a half's worth of brilliant material crammed into 40 minutes.
Yeah, of course.
If you want to hear it again, you can find it online at repcolite.com.
And I want to let everyone know that Don Decker, who we interviewed earlier, is going to be a guest presenter at our Inspired Color and Design event coming up on November 7th. So make sure you get to our website and get your tickets before they're sold out.
And don't forget to get out to Gordon Water in Rockford for their grand opening. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And even though you can't have Frank Lloyd Wright design your house for any number of reasons.
Mostly because he's no longer with us.
Yes, and he's expensive.
Okay.
Remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he can't do it,
yes.
We will help you come up with a space that's uniquely yours. Thanks for listening.